Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. This year, as Zoom and video chatting changed the way students experience the classroom, the difficulties of remote learning became clear, the ability to focus, follow, and engage. Yet one student cohort has seen some benefit in virtual learning, those with hearing loss and other disabilities. The technology has offered them a different way to learn, sometimes a better way, with free closed captioning, for example, or the ability to lip read with a teacher. But what happens when those students return to the classroom and return to a world where people have to wear masks indoors? How will that affect those with hearing loss as they transition back to the classroom, especially those who read lips? Joining me to discuss this transition is Michelle Morgan, an experienced digital accessibility specialist from Yale University. She specializes in working with faculty to help create a more inclusive learning environment and the benefits both virtual and physical classroom spaces can provide. Michelle, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me today.
And listeners, if you would like to get in on this conversation, are you someone or the parent of someone who has benefited from remote learning? Are you the parent of a child who is deaf or has hearing loss? How has remote learning been for you? Are you or your child looking forward to returning to the classroom? Are you happier with remote learning? Give us a call. 646-435-7280. 646-435-7280. So, Michelle, a digital accessibility specialist. What does this role look like?
What is that? Yeah, I get that question a lot, actually. So basically, my job at Yale is to work with faculty to make sure that the classroom experience, whether it is in person or online, is as accessible as possible. And really what we mean by accessibility is that students will be able to participate in an activity or an assessment or the discussion, anything that's happening in the classroom, they really should be able to participate regardless of their disability status. So I do not actually work in our accommodations office at Yale. They are great, wonderful people, and they meet with students and they determine what accommodations will be and help, you know, implement those. But I really work to make the entire experience more inclusive across the board.
How did you become interested in this?
Well, I did my PhD in American Studies, so I'm coming from a really strong social justice mm-hmm. background. And when I finished in 2017, I had written a dissertation around visual and material culture, thinking about how people gain knowledge through different modes of interacting with the world. And so not at all disability studies related, but I did have a real interest in alternative ways of knowing. For everyone, thinking about people who are working class or maybe mm-hmm. didn't know how to read in the 19th century, how did they get information about their world? And so I was working for our Poorview Center for Teaching and Learning while I was finishing up my dissertation, and we had a student enrolled at Yale who was blind and a sculptor, and she was taking a ton of history of art courses, and she needed to have all of the images and all of her readings described. I had to go in and write out image descriptions so that she could listen on her screen reader to what those images were as it was reading the text of those articles out loud to her. So it was really just an eye-opening experience for me, and I just never looked back. Our university developed a web accessibility policy at the same time around technology and how it has to be usable by people with disabilities. And the team was sort of developed, and I was really in the right place at the right time.
I'm going to ask you, very generally speaking, what kind of accommodations yeah. existed for deaf and hard of hearing students before the pandemic to assist in their learning?
Sure. So some really common accommodations for deaf students or hard of hearing students are CART services. And I'm speaking in the higher ed mm-hmm. world more than K-12, which is where my experience is. So CART is where you would have a remote transcriptionist who would be able to log in and hear the lecture that's happening in class and transcribe that in a combination of closed captioning, like automatic captioning that they would correct in the moment so that it was really correct. And sometimes those people would have specialized content area specializations, or they'd be given a vocabulary list ahead of time, et cetera. So that's really a very common accommodation. ASL interpreters, if the student prefers that, then an ASL interpreter will be in class. There are Loop/FM systems that can be put in place, which is a microphone directly from a professor's voice that is wired into a hearing aid so that it amplifies just for the student. Those are some pretty common accommodations for deaf, hard of hearing students.
You know what? We've got a call on line two, a public school teacher, sure. Amy calling. Hi, Amy. Thanks for calling All of It. Amy, are you there? Did we lose Amy?
We might have lost her.
Maybe Amy put us on hold. Well, my guest is Michelle Morgan, experienced digital accessibility specialist from Yale. We are talking about the various
digital
ways.
Digital accessibility.
Yes, exactly. Oh, Amy's on line one now. Okay. Hi, Amy, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thank you so much for calling in. Sorry about that.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a long-time listener, and I'm thrilled to be on the show.
So tell us about your experience.
So I'm a public school teacher in Brooklyn, and I actually teach regular ed. I teach ICT kids, and we even have 12 to 1 kids who push in because I'm an arts teacher. And I'm teaching remotely this year. One of the things that I've found that's really benefited everyone is that if I do a demonstration, of course, with student consent, I will sometimes say, hey, do you guys want me to record this? And I can do, sorry, I have a tiny person who's yelling in the background,
that's okay.
Such as remote learning. But when, you know, I'll do a demonstration live and I can record it and then say to everybody, okay, I'm going to email it to you. Or if I'm working with a small group or kids one-on-one, I can do a quick recording of a demonstration and they have access to it anytime. So that's really beneficial for people who either like have cognitive issues or for kids who just really want to go back and take a look at things a second time.
Thank you so much for sharing that. We really appreciate it. Let's talk to George on line two, another teacher calling in. Love teachers. Hi, George. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, Allison. I just wanted to say I teach at an amazing transfer school called Manhattan Comprehensive Night and Day High School. I'm teaching remotely at night, and I have a bunch of young mothers that are doing really well in my class. We have amazing conversations about history. I hear a little baby cooing on their lap. They're doing some great writing. And I just wanted to add that there might be some kids that have some social anxiety issues that remote learning might be beneficial for as well.
George, thank you for being a teacher and thank you for sharing your experience. So, Michelle, I'm just curious, you know, it's we've been talking about some of the benefits of remote learning. A lot of people have had difficulties. What have been some of the surprising benefits and how have some companies like Zoom and Google stepped up?
So I think what we saw with Zoom in particular is that they rolled out their auto captioning feature maybe faster than they would have otherwise. And it's still not widely available. It's still in beta. We were lucky enough to have them just turn it on for us. We weren't even told that that was going to happen. But it really has made the auto captioning better. It's kind of scary when you think about the algorithms that are listening to our voices that are improving the technologies that improve people's lives. But that is definitely one benefit that was surprising. It's just how much faster auto captions have been released across the board, across different platforms, and how much better the technology is getting at accurately transcribing those, because that can be a real issue, even with captions. Of course, if you don't have a real person doing it, if you have an accent, it's better at picking up men's voices and women's voices, et cetera. But it is getting better, and it is improving the technology very quickly. So that's been surprising.
What have been some of the challenges?
Well, by the same token, if it's not very accurate, it can be difficult for students. There can be embarrassing moments. Sometimes you may have someone presenting or speaking and their accent is heavy and it makes it almost impossible for the captioning to be accurate. So it's both a blessing and a curse. Some of the other challenges, you know, the caller, I believe it was George, who just called in around social anxiety. There is an ample opportunity for students to just turn off their cameras. The faculty have been so supportive around that, I think, where they just understand that you can't be on all the time. If you have internet connectivity issues and like access in the real sense of, can we get internet so that we can be, you know, we've heard this a lot in public schools as well. Like teachers are just having a hard time with families that may not have access the same way as other families. So that's been a challenge. I think the faculty, at least at Yale, have been really, really flexible around keeping your camera off or understanding that you may not be able to make it to class because you don't, your signal's not good. At the same time, that it can be a real benefit for students who don't want to necessarily be on in the same way that they are physically in the classroom.
My guest is Michelle Morgan. She's a digital accessibility specialist from Yale. We want you to be involved in this conversation. Are you someone or the parent of someone who has benefited from remote learning, or a teacher? We're hearing from a lot of teachers. Is your child hard of hearing or deaf? How has remote learning been for you? Or your child looking forward to going back to the classroom? Are you happier with remote learning? 646-435-7280 is our number. Let's go to Marilyn on line 5, who has some expertise in this area. Hi, Marilyn. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, thank you. I am a speech-language pathologist by trade, and I contract with Google right now, and I just wanted to share with you some free apps that people might not be aware of that can help if they need it for online learning, or even if they're a person who cares for someone with a speech impairment. Mm-hmm. Can I share those with you?
Absolutely.
Okay, so as she already mentioned, there's Live Transcribe, so that's the captioned speech that's been really useful, and it has sped up. Because our machine learning models are definitely improving. There's Google Translate. That's really underutilized, and it's improving with more utilization. There's a new app called Look to Speak. That's for someone who's nonverbal, and they can actually use eye gaze to pick out different phrases to say quickly. There's an app called Action Blocks, which is a really quick way to just hit an icon on your phone, and it goes straight to the thing that you want to do. Like if someone has difficulty like pulling up an Uber and going through all the different steps, they can just program it to call an Uber right away. There's another app called Shortcuts, which is in our beta testing. So if someone's interested in that, you can just Google it and look that up. There's also voice access, so that's really good for people who have, like, motor impairments, and they can just use their voice to control the phone. And then the really exciting thing we have Project Euphonia. People should Google Project Euphonia, and that's where we're trying to make speech recognition work for people who have speech impairments so that they can use closed captioning on their virtual calls. Thank you.
Marilyn, thanks for calling in. Michelle, I want to talk about, you know, those are all amazing apps and tech that we can use. But what about in the real world when people come back to classrooms and people who have that wear masks and where people who need to read lips? It's been a huge factor. It may have been better for them in terms of remote learning. First, and I hope this isn't sounding like such a dumb question, but I've seen people wear clear masks. Does that actually help? Does that work?
I think they help as long as they don't fog up. You know, I've seen a couple of people using them, and we did have a strong push for those when the pandemic first started. I think not knowing how long we would be out, we haven't really had a chance to test those out in a real world situation at this point, because we're still remote learning at Yale. When things were, you know, it's really difficult to say what things are going to look like when we return. I think there's going to be a lot of things that we've learned from remote learning that will be still implemented in the classroom. I think there will be the same kind of meeting with students one-on-one to see what their particular needs are. to make sure that those are met in the classes that they choose to take as we return. So I can't say with any kind of certainty what the future holds, except for that I think we learned a lot over the course of the past year and a half around what remote learning looks like. I think there was a real fear of that previously, that now we're seeing, yeah, like lectures are really great. It's good to be able to have captions, even if you're not deaf, hard of hearing. Captions mm-hmm. can be really useful for students. So there are things that I think faculty will adopt moving forward. And there are things that, I think they miss as well, the in-person interaction as far as being in this space together. So it's going to be an ongoing project. I really think that's the way innovation happens, is something, kind of catastrophic happens, mm-hmm. and we adapt from there.
Let's try again. One more call in. Anna Maria's on line one. Anna Maria, can you tell us really quickly how things have been at home?
Yeah. So my younger brother he has a number of different disabilities, including mm-hmm. Autism and general learning disability. And he very much misses the social aspect of the classroom. But one thing that's been really great for him with the virtual classroom is that he can just get up and walk around when he needs to. Mm. He can stim and people don't give him weird looks. Like, his stimming is a lot of, like, talking and kind of character voices and, like, kind of scratching himself, not in a harmful way, just kind of in a stimulating way. So that's been nice, that he can just do what he needs to do to give himself stimulation without disrupting the class.
Anna Maria, thank you for sharing your experience. Michelle, we only have about a minute left. Is there one sure. thing that you wanted our audience to know about digital accessibility that we didn't get to?
I mean, we didn't talk about blindness and low vision and some of the amazing remote learning things that have happened around that as well, which we spend a lot of time on. But I also would just say that, calling in the woman calling in the speech pathologist with apps, there are so many resources available online. Do a little bit of Googling, contact the university, ask them what they're doing with their students, contact your local public school systems if you can find someone. There are so many options that are free and going to make things much easier in the future moving forward, I think.
And maybe we will continue this conversation surrounded vision. Yes. Thank you so much for...
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, we'll probably check back with you. Michelle Morgan, digital accessibility specialist from Yale. Thank you for being with us, and we'll get this together. Part two.
Great. Thanks, Allison.